It's 8:35, and present this morning are Representative Johnson, Representative Edgemond, Representative Johansson, and myself, Representative Seaton. And we have some other committee members that are scheduled into another meeting, and they'll join us when they're through there. So today, we're going to hear House Bill 289, Employment Tax Exemption and Spill Response. My intention on this bill is to have the bill get public hearing, public testimony. We have one amendment to offer on this bill, and then hold this bill to give the public a chance to offer further testimony on the bill and address the amendment changes before it moves on. Before we begin, is there any questions or anything from the committee that needs to come up? See nothing. Speaker Harris, would you come forward and introduce your bill for us?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am John Harris, representative from House District 12. House Bill 289 was introduced at the request of some fishermen, not only in my area, but in Cordova and Kodiak, and I think in your area as well. Any of those who fishermen who participate in the oil spill response program with the oil industry. And as we all know, dating back to 89 and later, that oil spill response or prevention is very, very critical to the movement of oil in the state, as well as protection of our other natural resources, fishing and that sort of thing. The fishermen have worked very hard in cooperation with the industry to try and provide a system that that does just that, or helps with that. And what happened is last year, I believe it was the Department of Labor, sent notices to fishing boat captains or owners that they had to pay unemployment insurance taxes on their employees while they're doing these drills. Now, understanding these drills only take place a few times a year, and the boats are, they sign up, but that's not their primary occupation, obviously. And so the fishermen, Mr. Chairman, as you know, are not ones who like to spend a lot of time doing a lot of paperwork. Now, they want to be out fishing and catching fish, moving fish, processing fish, whatever, and a whole lot of paperwork is not exactly what they thrive on. At this point in time, they had felt like the unemployment taxes were being dealt with by the folks that hired them, rather than they had to deal with them, and that's kind of the way it was. But then the Department of Labor said, "No, you're responsible." What my concern is, and the reason why we brought this piece of legislation forward, is we don't want to lose this oil spill response vehicle that we have, and. In your packet, I think you have a copy of a editorial or an article by Wesley Loy from the Daily News that quotes that talks to some fishermen. It says some fishermen have vowed to quit the industry-funded oil spill response program entirely due to paperwork and costs involved with the unemployment insurance issue. We don't want that. We don't want that at all. As a matter of fact, I think what you'll find, Mr. Chairman, is that the Regional Citizens Advisory Council, which deals with Prince William Sound, Cordova District Fishermen United, other fisheries groups, will be in support of this type of legislation. We'll also be in support of trying to make sure that the fishermen and the fishing boats don't leave the system. It's important. So that, Mr. Chairman, is kind of it in a nutshell from the beginning. I know that there are people here from Department of Labor. I'm not sure exactly what their position is at this point in time, but I'm sure we'll find out. But I know that there is a pretty united front from, I think, the industry, from Alyeska Pipeline, the shippers themselves, and the fishing community in statewide to try and do something to keep this program on its feet, in the water, you know, pulling boom if that's what it takes, and keep it alive. So Mr. Chairman, I truly appreciate you being a co-sponsor of this. I know Representative Ledoux has mentioned that she will be a co-sponsor, coming from the Kodiak area, I think Representative Chenault from the Kenai, and others. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I turn it over to questions from the committee.
Thank you. Questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Johan.
Not necessarily for the speaker, but the program itself, where the fishermen sign up, how they get into that program, is that something labor can answer? Do they, or is there somebody that can speak to that? I'm just curious because, you know, we've got the large cruise vessels up and down southeast, and I'm wondering how folks in my neck of the woods can either get into the program or if they're really aware of it. I know it's very important to your district, obviously, but we've got those big ships with big fuel tanks. So I'm just wondering if there's nobody here today, maybe when it comes back up, we can have someone come and address that, the program itself.
Representative Johansson, through the chair. There is a representative from the Department of Labor here. I don't have the answer. I could get it for you. I don't have it immediately dealing with your area or other areas, but certainly I think there are other people here that might be able to help with that.
Thank you.
And Representative Johansson, we do have two people signed up online from the regional RCAC, the regional oil spill response, so they'll probably be able to answer that question.
And
Representative Johansson.
I think the UFA representative was nodding his head. Maybe he had some information about it.
If you want them to come up, Mr. Chairman, I'll gladly back away and let other people testify that may have and probably do have far more information than I do.
And we'll just wait and make sure that no one else on the committee has questions on the from the bill sponsor. Mm-hmm. Okay, not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Speaker Harris, for coming down and introducing the bill. At this time, let's go to public testimony, and let's have the Department of Labor first, if they wouldn't mind, come up. And welcome, and would you introduce yourself for the record, and since there's two of you, if you change speakers, would you just say your name each time before for the recording secretary?
For the record, my name is Paula Scavera. I'm a Special Assistant Legislative Liaison to Alaska Department of Labor. And with me is Bill Kramer, who I'll let him introduce himself.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Kramer. I'm the Chief of Unemployment Insurance for the Department of Labor. And here and be glad to try and answer whatever questions you may have this morning.
Well, thank you. And before we get started, I'd like to note for the record that Representative Ledoux has joined us. Paula, do you want to just make a presentation or do you want to take questions?
Well, actually, we were here for just questions. I've had a conversation with you and your staff about this bill, and we know there's an amendment coming, which we appreciate. I think that gets to where you wanted to go on the bill. This bill is specifically only for oil spills, so everyone knows that. It's not for any other kind of disaster. It's oil spills and oil spills drills. And we don't run the oil spill program. That's the Department of Environmental Conservation, and RCAC, I'm sure, can answer the questions about how people get hired and do all the oil spill stuff. We are just here for questions about the unemployment insurance program.
Great. And I did want to clarify that my understanding is that this is not a new rule, that this you were just advising people of the existing law, and so that this isn't a reinterpretation or anything else, and that we need to change the statute if we want to change the system. It's not a regulation that we are that you have come forward with. So we're not in any way placing blame on the Department of notifying people of what the law is. So I just wanted to make that clear as well.
Chairman Seaton, you're correct. This was not a new law. It was not a new regulation. It's been in effect. In fact, during the Exxon Valdez spill, crew members and crew paid into the unemployment insurance program for the wages they earn while cleaning up oil spills.
Okay, thank you. And questions for the Department of Labor. Representative Edgemont.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how much money are we talking on an annual basis that gets paid into the program? Or do you have an estimate? Or?
Well, I'll turn that over to Mr. Kramer, but you pay UI tax based on how much your wages you earn. So it would depend on how much a crew member made. Alaska is one of the few states where the employee and the employer pay into the unemployment insurance tax program. So it would depend upon how much is made in a year. Mr. Kramer may be able to give you some more details.
Through the chair, Representative Edgemont. I'm not sure I understand your question.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Edgemont.
As a quick follow-up, just trying to get some sense, the bill sponsor, the speaker alluded to how this was sort of intermittent services, and fishermen and the boats, everybody else involved do other things as their primary occupation. So theoretically, we're not talking, overly large sums of money here in terms of the amount that's being collected. That's the number I'm trying to.
Representative Edgemont, through the chair. We're unable to put a real accurate number on the amount that the crew would pay in taxes during their oil spill response. It depends on the details of each operator, how much they earn. We don't think that it would be a large amount of money. I think we put in the fiscal note that we thought it would be insignificant in terms of, in comparison to the size of the entire UI trust fund.
Okay, and that's the response I was looking for. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to back up for a minute as a co-sponsor of this legislation and just explain a little bit more. I know we all have the bill packet, but what we're looking at here is a series of exemptions from unemployment tax. The first one is domestic service in a private home. So these are normal exemptions that are in existence. And number 17, which is on, most of this bill is not, is just quoting existing law. And then on 17, which is the exemption for commercial fishermen, it's service performed by an individual engaged in catching fish or other forms of aquatic life, and that the individual does not receive any cash remuneration. And what we're doing here is making sure that someone getting trained for a drill response does not all of a sudden throw this into a non-exempt category. So the addition here is allowing for remuneration for service performed while the boat responds or prepares to respond in preparation to engage in emergency or practice drill response for an oil spill. And just for everybody to understand how the program works is that the vessels, every crew member has to be trained, have an 8-hour hazardous material operator training per year. And so you go for that. It's not even on board the boat, but it's through the vessel owner. And then once every probably 3 years, the individuals get a chance to go out and practice their skills, whether it's pulling boom, whatever those that particular vessel employs. And so that's the, following up on your question, that's about the amount of normal activity that there is. So it's not like someone's out there for 3 months out of the year. Now, the other portion of this, and I'd like to get verification from the Department of Labor, is if there was, hopefully there isn't, but if there would be another kind of Exxon Valdez oil spill where you would have an oil spill that was going to be a long time and people would be involved, that the owners can opt into the program. So that this exemption here does not mean that if there is a massive oil spill that people are responding to for 3 or 6 months, that those employers and employees could opt into the system and pay unemployment insurance and then be covered. So this is specifically looking at and trying to accommodate so that we keep a high quality and a high number of volunteer people under contract and under training so that they're available to respond to oil spills. And as you've seen in your packet there, one of the things we have is from Dave Blossom, who is with Cook Inlet Oil Spill Response. And what they're talking about in there is that, and the quote is, many fishermen have indicated that they have to do all the paperwork and pay this tax that will probably drop out of the oil spill response program. And so that's what we're, that's what this whole thing is really geared for. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I heard you say that during the Exxon Valdez oil spill that they did, in fact, pay taxes?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I can't say 100% of them did pay taxes, but they were supposed to pay taxes, you know.
Was that because they were considered employees as opposed to contract, and this is a contract, so we're really talking about two different relationships when they paid that tax under the oil spill? Was that, were they employees then and therefore subjected to the unemployment tax, where in, under this scenario, I think they're contractors, which would mean they would be responsible for their own?
Under existing state law, the only time crew members are exempt from paying UI tax is when they're commercial fishing. That's the way the law is now, is currently. So when they were working on an oil spill, working for a boat that was under contract, cleaning up an oil spill, they were not exempt and paying into the unemployment insurance tax.
Okay. And Representative Johnson.
I think the point is they were under contract. They weren't hired by, so they weren't actually employees of Alyeska or whomever was responsible. They were contract labor, so that would cause them to be responsible for their own taxes. Is that the way I understand it?
Well, through the chair, Representative Johnson, during that time period, as one who lived here, there was many different kinds of ways people were getting employed. Boats were hired on the spot and didn't even get guaranteed that they were going to get paid, but they were out there cleaning up the spill. There was people under contract, subcontracts, subcontracts, but the law states currently that fishermen are only exempt from, I mean, crew members are only exempt from paying in, and the captains are only exempt from paying in to the UI Trust Fund while commercial fishing.
I understand that, Mr. I guess what I'm trying to get to is the difference between the relationship of an employee versus a contract. If they were employed, then the parent company would be doing all the paperwork, basically, and they just get a check with all of the deductions and everything taken out of it. If they're a contractor, then they get a lump sum, and then they're responsible. So I guess I'm looking at the relationship that exists. Are these employees or are they contractors? Because in one case, there's no paperwork. If they're employees, basically, you just get a check with it already done. And in the other case, where you're a contractor, you would be responsible. So I guess I'm looking at more the relationship and not necessarily because they happen to be fishermen, but the difference between an employee-employee relationship and a contractor and contractee, I guess, relationship. So yeah. I'm kind of looking at seeing where this falls into that body of, and I even hate to say law because I'm not even close to a lawyer, but where are we in this? Is this a contractor? Is this a retainer? Are they considered employees of the eyes of the state? Where does this group of people fall, I guess?
It's to the chair, and I'll have Bill jump in any second. It's not really contractor, but what they're doing. The exemption is because of what they're doing, not because of contractor situation. It's more the service performed. That's the reason.
If I may, Representative Johnson, through the chair, in this instance, the fishermen here who are engaged in oil spill response and drill work, the department is viewing them as employees, and as employees, the law says they should be covered under the unemployment insurance program, and taxes should be paid. If an individual is determined to be a private contractor, that individual would be self-employed, and self-employment is generally not covered under the program.
Representative Ledoux.
I think what Mr. Johnson might be getting at is the relationship with the, between the boat owner and the spill contractor. In other words, if the boat owner and his boat is employed by the, if they're employees of the spill contractor, then wouldn't the spill contractor be doing all the paperwork for everybody? I think that's what Mr. Johnson is trying to, or Representative Johnson is trying to get at. Am I correct?
Representative Johnson?
And that gets a little closer to it, but I'm really, the comment was made, Mr. Chairman, that, you know, fishing boat captains and fishermen don't like to do paperwork, and what I'm trying to get to, do they really have to do the paperwork? If they're employees, they just get a check and all the paperwork's done, just like anyone who has a job. If they're contractors, then they have to go through the gyrations of filling out the paperwork and doing all that stuff. So I'm trying to get to the point, is this a, and I hate paperwork as much as the next person, and if I could pass a law that I didn't have to do any, I would certainly be introducing that. If it's, is this paperwork or money or both? And that's what I'm trying to get to. I mean, are we dealing with people, honest citizens, who just may not be, you know, really good at paperwork and don't like doing it, and as a result are possibly, you know, running afoul of this regulation? Are we really just talking about money?
And Representative John, let me try and clear up. As a vessel owner,
okay,
and someone that's been employed on spills, let me try to clarify it, and then we'll have the Department of Labor correct me if I'm wrong. First of all, you can't be an independent contractor if you're under the direct supervision of your employer. In other words, there's a definition of employment, and we can't just call fishermen, oh, you're an independent contractor, if I'm telling you what to do and you're the mechanic and you're not hired as somebody to come down to the vessel to do a job, but you're actually there and structurally working with me and I'm supervising you, and we can't, I mean, it doesn't work that way. You're an employee. The difference is that under the law right now, there's an exemption for employees. There is basically an independent contractor if you are engaged in, on page 5 here, engaged in catching fish or other forms of aquatic life. So it's very specific on catching fish. Now, I have tenders. You know, we go out there and pick up fish from other fishermen and refrigerate them and bring them in. Those are employees. They are not. We used to think, before the Exxon Valdez oil spill, everybody that was involved in commercial fishing got paid just like fishermen do. It got very, very well clarified for us that those people were employees on tenders and all. And in fact, that's what this amendment that's going to be offered later is, to make sure that we're not trying to change that status. But the relationship with the commercial fishermen is only if they are engaged in catching fish, and that's their only remuneration. And this exemption says that you can be in, you're exempt if you're engaged in catching fish, or if you're getting training for a drill response for an oil spill, or if you're responding to an oil spill. So it's expanding the definition of the exemption to also allow for this this remuneration while it performed in that operation. So it's not a contractor or employee situation, because when you're on a fishing boat, they're always under, the fisherman is always under the supervision of the captain. So,
Mr. Chairman, I certainly understand that, and I do have a handle on that. I guess what I'm getting to, and maybe I can just simplify this question, is who does the paperwork? Does the company do the paperwork? Does the captain do the paperwork? Does the employee do the paperwork? Who actually fills out, deducts, writes a check to the state in this situation?
For the chair, through the chair, Representative Johnson, it's the vessel captain.
So that would mean it is a paperwork and money issue. So that really answers my question. I thought if the company had to do it, then we're just talking money. But since it goes down to the captain, then...
Representative Ledoux.
Do you really mean when you say it's the vessel captain, it's the vessel owner?
Paula. Excuse me. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, Representative Ledoux. I was assuming that most captains are owners, and I stand corrected.
Let's see. So, sorry for interrupting there, but I was trying to get a little more detail in there from experience. Are there other questions for Department of Labor? Representative Edgman, and I wanted to first recognize that we've been joined by Representative Holmes.
Does the department to support the bill?
Through the chair, we are neutral in the bill. We're neutral in the bill. We will enforce any laws that you pass.
Any further questions for Department of Labor? Okay, thank you very much for coming in and answering our questions there. And if more generate, we'll send them over to you.
Thank you, sir.
Do we have to testify here? We have Jerry McCune.
Mr. Chairman, probably my scribble on the paper there is kind of. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry McCune. I represent Cordova District Fishermen United as their president. And just a little bit of information at the beginning of this. I have a lot of stake in this particular.
And Jerry, before you started, yes. I just wanted to draw everyone's attention that you do have a letter from CDFU. In your pack as well. Go ahead, sir.
I do have a stake in this. I was one of the original guys that realized that we couldn't work on the oil spill as fishermen. And this happened in San Francisco just recently. You can't go out there and touch that oil or do anything, which is very frustrating when there's an oil spill. It's right in your backyard. Until you have this training, and we came up with this program with Alyeska to get this training for the fishermen, get them going, and they have to take all these classes and do all this stuff. But one of the things that concerns me here is that we're talking a little bit of money here. I mean, most of those guys get $200 a day or more, and there's two or three drills a year. And some of these guys have 10 years invested in doing this oil spill drills, learning how to use this boom and all this other stuff. And we lose some of these guys that have been in there a long time. And if there's an oil spill, we're going to be training some new people, or we're going to be trying to get new people that will take part. Like I had a fisherman call me yesterday that's in the core fleet, we call. CDFU has the contract with Alyeska to administer the program, which is, I think, is the same in Kodiak and Cook Inlet, I think. That administers the program out of the CDFU, so we have to be the call out. We have to have people on 24 hours to make sure if there's a spill, there to be a call out of boats to use. But the guy yesterday told me he goes out two, three times a year with a drill, pays his crew real good, calls it good. You know, if he has to do all this extra paperwork and stuff, he just doesn't want to do it. It's just. It's not that fishermen don't know how to do paperwork. It's just that it's just a hassle for this little bit of income that they pay the crew to do. And I just don't want to lose everything that we've worked for since 1989 to keep this program going with Alyeska, which is a very solid program. If there is a major spill, fishermen will be a major part of that cleanup. And they're very well trained now. So it took a long time to get to the point where we're at, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jerry. Are there questions for Mr. McCune? Seeing none, thank you again for coming forward. Jerry, do you have something else?
Just to answer Representative Johansson's question, we contract with Alyeska to hire, we don't hire the fishermen come in and they sign up. and then you work your way up, and you take, you're required to take the training. Under contract, CDFU runs the, they have people come over from Alyeska, we run the training for all the fishermen. It has whopper training, all the stuff you have to do to qualify to go out there and work on the spill. And so that's how the program got started with Alyeska. On your question, I don't know how exactly. There would have to be some private or some way that the cruise ship would fund something to get the fishermen into a program that would respond to an oil spill or something that would happen in Southeast. I think people have been looking at it, so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Jerry, can you tell me how many people and boats we have involved in this program that we are jeopardizing and losing? I mean, what's the total number that we have? Do you have any idea?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I'm not sure. I had about five or six guys that we call that are on the main core fleet in Corolla, which is the biggest spill response fleet there is. I think there's a core fleet that's the main boats that go out and do all the stuff. There's the backup guys that do one drill a year. And then there's the smaller boats of Gilner. So I would imagine I've had five or six guys in the core fleet that's been in there for quite a long time tell me that they're not going to do this if you have to keep doing all the paperwork. But that's all I know.
If I could, right, Mr. Now. Chairman, I'd like to rephrase the question. I'm not particularly care who likes the program, who doesn't. How many total boats do we have involved in the program? I just want to a number of the people that have volunteered to help in the event of an oil spill. Is there? Can you give me a guesstimate of the number of boats that are available for that?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson. I think in our program, I'm not totally clear, but I think there's at least 50 boats involved or more. And the Kodiak, I'm not sure. I could get those numbers for you, though.
Mr. Chair, that's not important. I just wanted to kind of point out that this is a group of people that have kind of signed up for the reserves, for lack of a better term, in the event of an emergency. And I see them as a very important part of an oil spill response. And I just wanted to put it on record that we have 50 good citizens out there who are prepared to come to the aid of the state if they need, if they're needed in the event of an oil spill. So that was the purpose for the question.
Thank you. And it would be good when we're going through the different areas, say, Cook Inlet area, the RCAC can probably provide us those numbers. We'll have them before the next hearing as well. So, thank you, Jerry. Next is Douglas Mertz, I think. Is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Douglas Mertz. I'm the legislative monitor for the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, which is the post-Exxon Valdez organization that focuses on oil spill matters generally in the area served by TAPS traffic. I'm also an former assistant attorney general who was heavily involved in oil spill matters, including some of these matters involving the mosquito fleet, the fishermen who assist in oil spill matters. The one aspect of this business that we haven't touched on here is that the unemployment security scheme is an amalgam between federal law and state law. The federal law, FUTA, you may see on your paycheck a line for FUTA, that's the Federal Unemployment Tax Act, is the federal equivalent of the state Unemployment Security Act. And they work together to set the terms to determine who is subject to the tax and how the program is administered, because it is joint federal and state funding as well as administration. The basic problem here is that the federal law sets certain minimum standards, people who must be covered by state unemployment law. And if state law exempts people who should not be exempted under federal law, it will be preempted by the federal law. In fact, the federal law requires that any change to state law must be reviewed and approved by the U.S. Department of Labor. Whatever you do will go to the U.S. Department of Labor, which will then decide if it is consistent with the federal law. And if it's not, it'll be effectively preempted or nullified. So the question is, does the bill as it's now written or as it could be changed, is it consistent with federal law? And the answer is we don't know. The standards are very vague. I have asked the Department of Labor if they've talked to their federal counterparts and not gotten a response. I've asked the AG's office if they haven't gotten a response. the one thing that I think really has to happen before you all can proceed with a bill is for our friends here from the Department of Labor to talk to their federal counterparts and say, here are the potential fixes that are being looked at in Alaska. Will you approve these under the Federal Unemployment Tax Act? That has to come next, in my opinion. You've got the fix that's in the bill now. You've got the possibility of changing the minimum amount salary or remuneration that makes one subject to the act. You've got the possibility that may make it more amenable to the feds of limiting it to practices and drills and not actual responses, which could involve a lot more pay. And there may be others. I believe that the next step is for all of these options to be presented by our Department of Labor to the Federal Department of Labor to see which of them they will approve and which they won't. And then you can make your decision.
Well, thank you. And we will get them back up here to address that issue. Before we go further, did you have further testimony?
No.
Okay. Representative Johans.
When was the last time you spoke with the Department of Labor with that question?
I sent the question to them, I would say, 3 or 4 weeks ago and never got a response.
Was that in a written form or a conversation?
Yeah, it was written.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux.
Well, I guess I understood that this bill was a response to the department, our Department of Labor, I guess enforcing the law as it is on the books now, and previously maybe they hadn't enforced it. So up until now, people haven't been filling out this paperwork. What did the feds do?
Donuts. Oh, somebody else is doing it too.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know the answer to that. I've never heard that they have been involved or aware of this problem on any level, but there may be an answer that somebody else has. I don't know.
Yep. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for coming, Mr. Merritt. And can we get the Department of Labor to come back up since we're working on this right now?
Mr. Chairman, what is the penalty in this committee for your
It depends on whether it's the chairman or not. Can't even figure out how it turned off. I think we've talked about this. So would you go ahead and just bring us up to date on where we are on the issue of SUDA FUDA and our exemption under the law. And, you know, first of all, with the page 5 change, which is the one just putting into the crew members section first.
Do you want to start that first, or you want to do the FUDA first?
Well, do the FUDA, but I mean, I don't want to mix those two if there's a difference between the two.
There's a difference. For the record, my name is Paula Scavera. Again, I'm Special Assistant to Department of Labor. I've never received any request from Mr. Mertz, so I apologize for not answering, but I've never seen it. We have received, this was a question that we did ask the U.S. Department of Labor many weeks ago, and I have a copy of an email that we received from the program specialist of the USDOL ETA OWSDL. They love acronyms back there. Who says in his email that excluding workers from state U unemployment insurance coverage would not cause a federal issue. As long as they were not excluded, if they worked, well, I'm gonna pass this over to Bill. He can read acronyms better than I can, and he can simplify this better. Say your name for the record.
This is Bill Kramer, Department of Labor. Mr. Chairman, from the email from the United States Department of Labor in an attempt to answer this question, they had some conversation in the people in USDOL, and they advised that excluding workers from unemployment compensation coverage would not cause a federal issue as long as they were not excluded if they worked for government, nonprofit, or in Alaska, Native American tribes. They go on to talk about what the IRS may or may not find, and they say clearly we're not the Internal Revenue Service, we're the Department of Labor, and they render their, they put out their thoughts on it. They do go on to say in relation to unemployment insurance, well, I guess it's relevant. Should I continue with the email?
Sure.
We said we could not speak to the Internal Revenue Service, but that if the Internal Revenue Service found them to be employees, they could be required to pay the full Federal Unemployment Tax Act without the credit for paying the state tax. Requesting a revenue service from the Internal Revenue Service was suggested as a possibility. The fishing boat captains might opt out of the training if they did not treat their workers as employees and do all the paperwork associated as being classified. They discussed different options, which this committee has already discussed and got nowhere with that.
So okay, well, thank you. At least it sounds like for unemployment insurance, we have indication from the federal government that if we adopt this as is here, we shouldn't run afoul of, because we're not talking about government workers, we're talking about private, we're talking about fishing, fishermen. So, Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if that might be something that we could get a copy of for our files.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, certainly.
We'll get copies to the chair and he can get it to all copies of the committee.
Yeah, we'll distribute that. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Department of Labor on that issue? Thank you. Appreciate that. Let's go to the phone lines. Tracy Mayhew.
Tracy? Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Tracy Mayhew, and I am the Anchorage representative for the Seafarers International Union. The Seafarers International Union represents unlicensed merchant mariners working on board large ocean-going vessels. And in Alaska waters, that would be companies like Alaska Tanker Company, Seabulk, Tote, and Horizon Lines. And the SIU is in favor of passing this bill. Should the bill not pass and the fishermen pull out of participating in the oil spill response, then the Prince William Sound contingency plan will be in noncompliance, and that can threaten the livelihood of our members that work on board these large vessels. It is important to ensure that a consistent, well-trained local response team be maintained. If you think about it, who better to protect Alaska's waters than Alaskans? Our interest is in seeing that there are steady hands among the fishing crews who drill with the tanker crews, as this type of training and familiarity between the responders and the crews working together, this helps ensure that the best system of spill response and cleanup is undertaken. We're concerned that not passing this bill will create a disincentive for Alaskan fishing crews to participate in this program and will put other Alaskan livelihoods at risk. I thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tracy. And so is my understanding correct then that the voluntary fishing vessel program is an integral part of the oil spill contingency response plan, and if the fishermen would basically opt out of the program, that the contingency plan would no longer be effective, and then we might be looking at basically either large fines or shutting down tanker operations? Is that what I'm understanding?
That is my understanding, yes.
Okay, thank you, and we appreciate your testimony there. Let's see. Anyone else have any questions for Tracy? Thank you again, Tracy. Let's go to Mike Munger. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name, for the record, is Mike Munger. I'm the Executive Director of the Cook Inlet Regional Citizens Advisory Council. The mission of our council is to represent the citizens of Cook Inlet, promoting environmentally safe marine transportation and all facility operations in Cook Inlet. I appreciate the information provided today regarding House Bill 289. In our opinion, the fishing vessel program, which supplements spill response capabilities in Cook Inlet and Prince William Sound, is an integral component to the spill response system in Alaska. Anything that diminishes that program would certainly be a step backwards in spill response and preparedness in Alaska. After listening to the information provided today, I will be recommending to our council we support this legislation. And thank you for the opportunity to provide this testimony today, and I'd be certainly willing to try to answer any of your questions if you have some from our perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mike, one question that had come up earlier was approximate number of vessels that are employed in by the, not employed, but that are in the system for Cook Inlet Regional Aquaculture response.
The spill response, Mr. Chair, the spill response co-op, CISPRI, manages that vessel program up here. I don't have the accurate numbers. I could certainly provide them to you, but it's, I would estimate up to 100 vessels on contract. Now, not that they use all those vessels all the time, but the spill response co-op in Cook Inlet, goes to great lengths to make sure that there's enough vessels of opportunity, as they're called, on contract. So if, for example, if some vessels are out of service or up on dry dock, or that there'll be a backup system. But I don't have the accurate numbers. I just know that this is truly an integral part of our spill response system, and that's why I believe Alaska is at the forefront of the spill response capabilities.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Munger? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you.
John Velsko. John, are you online?
Yes, I am. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for co-sponsoring this legislation. It's very important. For the record, I'm the board member representing the City of Homer on the Prince William Sound RCAC, and also chairman of the Prince William Sound RCAC's Legislative Affairs Committee, and this is a high priority for us. We certainly appreciate your efforts. Just one thing to clear up, I noticed there were a lot of questions about the fishing vessel program. This is a federally mandated program. After the Exxon Valdez oil spill, OPA 90, the Oil Pollution Act of 1990, mandated these vessels to be under contract to be available for spill response. Currently, there are three categories of vessels. There are Category 1, Tier 1 is what Alyeska calls these vessels, and another name is the Core Fleet. And I believe the numbers on those are about 50 boats, and these are boats that are under contract, are supposed to be crewed on a continuous basis, and this has some bearing on what this legislation is going to be about, because they participate in more drills than the majority of the boats under contract, which would be the Tier 2, which would be Homer, Kodiak, Seward. There's about 220 vessels under contract for the Tier 2 vessels. They typically train once a year, an annual training to keep their certifications up, and typically they use two crew members for this once a year training, and normally the pay is about $200 per day for these crew members. So we're talking about a small amount of money. They're the typical Tier 2 vessel owner will pay about $1,200 for this annual training and wages to his crew members. Tier 3 vessels is an undetermined amount of vessels that they, what Alyeska would consider vessels of opportunity. They would go out and these vessels aren't under contract to Alyeska at the time, but they feel that they could get a significant amount of vessels under contract within 2 to 3 days. One of the considerations that our Legislative Affairs Committee asked me to pass on was we would like to make sure that this legislation only addresses the training and the drill portion, as responses tend to be lengthy, and we feel that if we were to have language in the legislation pertaining to actual spill response, it would probably be preempted federally because of the length of service of the crew members. They could make a substantial amount of money in wages. And I don't think that was the intent of this legislation, but one of the other things I'd like to echo is Doug Mertz's comments that I think we really do need to have a definitive legal opinion on whether HB 289, as written right now, will withstand a federal challenge. I think the federal legislation is pretty clear. If there's more than $1,500 paid in wages, then the employer, which in this case would be the vessel owner, since he is under contract to Alyeska, but his crew members are actually employed by the vessel owner. So the onus comes on to the vessel owner to fill out the paperwork. If we could raise, currently right now, the Department of Labor has a $250 reporting threshold for wages. If there is a federal preemption here, if we could just raise the threshold for reporting to $1,500, which some states already have, and they haven't violated the federal statute, we could bring the vast number of Tier 2 boats into compliance without any paperwork involved. Unfortunately, it won't help the core fleet, the Tier 1, but this is just something we'd like you to consider if, in fact, your legislation as presently written is preempted by federal law.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have questions from John? And John, if you wouldn't mind calling my office, we might want to be in contact with you about some of those issues. So if you wouldn't mind calling and giving us your phone number, contact number, some of the members of the committee might want to talk to you directly about possible amendments, sir.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And for the total number of boats involved here, I probably should let you know that I think it's somewhat over 300. It kind of varies between 300 and 350 vessels at any time, and there is redundancy built into the system. Alyeska has done a good job on making sure that we have an adequate number of boats available.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there further questions? Seeing none, is there anyone else online that would like to testify? Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to close public testimony at this time, I'll just leave public testimony open for the next hearing of the bill. We have some questions on amendments. There may be other people that want to give us some suggestions. This is a difficult enough issue, and there may be more than one way to skin this cat, and so we want to make sure that we consider all those and go forward from this committee with the best with the best option that we have. I noticed the Department of Labor came back in. Did you have something further testimony for us? Okay. We do have an amendment that I would like to offer, and that should be on your... Do we have that passed out, Lou? Thank you. So if you'll, I'd offer this as amendment number one, and that is 25 LS 1182/C-1 Wayne. And
I'll object just to talk about it.
So we do have an objection, and we have on, if you look on the final page of the bill, the final page of the bill has section 22, service performed as a crew member on a fishing vessel registered under state for services. The problem with this is that the definition of fishing vessel involves more than a catching vessel. The exemption in the law, section 17, only relates to fishermen catching fish or harvesting other aquatic life. So what the problem is with the way the bill is currently, section 22, that would tend to extend this exemption to people who are currently employees, that is, people on tender vessels. Those are all employees, they're paid as employees now. Fish processors, they're paid as employees. If they would be involved at all, the intention of this bill is not to expand a category to people who are employees and make employees exempt. The intention of this bill is to make sure that we don't take people that are exempt and inadvertently throw them into the non-exempt category. So this amendment clarifies that so that it's for replaces the existing language on lines 25 through 28, page 6, with the language that temporary services related to emergency oil spill training and response activities by an individual described in section 17 of the section, which is describing a commercial fisherman harvesting who harvests fish or other aquatic life products. And so that's what this does. It gets rid of an unintentional expansion that was written into the original bill. Any questions? Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm 99% sure I understand what we're doing, but just to be clear, this amendment would basically take out any change to Section 17. Section 17 would remain as it's written in current statute, and Section 22 would now read as it does here.
Thanks for the clarification there. No, it would not change Section 17 at all. Section 17 would stay exactly as it is. What it would do is just replace Section 22, the current Section 22, with this new Section 22. Because the current Section 22 talks about on a fishing vessel, mm-hmm. but the problem is a fishing vessel isn't defined as a vessel catching fish. Mm-hmm. It's anything involved in the fishing industry, basically. A fishing tender is a fishing vessel, a processor is a fishing vessel, mm-hmm. and we're not wanting to have any misinterpretation that there is an exclusion for processing vessels or tender vessels. It's only those people that are covered under the modified Section 17 that are actually, you know, that catch fish. Representative Hall.
I'm sorry, now I am confused. We may just be talking past each other. It looks to me like these first three lines of the amendment actually undo all the changes to Section 17 of the bill. So it would revert back to how it is currently written in statute. And then Section 22, we'd be adding this new Section 22 in lieu of the one that we have in front of us in the bill.
That looks like the way the amendment's written here. I give, we'll take a brief at ease.
Okay.
Was in the listening audience, we took a brief at ease to understand exactly what sections of the bill are modifying. So Just for those online, the first part of this amendment does eliminate the changes that were listed in Section 17. So the change will now be made in Section 22 that allows the exemption for oil spill training by the people that are covered under Section 17 of the current law. Is there any question on what the amendment means anymore? Representative Edgman?
I noticed in the amendment there's a use of the word temporary, and it's not in the bill. At least I don't see it. is that just a term to make things more concise, or is that something the department's going to promulgate regulations to define and you know, what's temporary, what's not temporary? We get an oil spill a year down the road. Maybe they're not temporary.
And since the Department of Labor constructed this amendment for us, helpfully, maybe we'll get them back up here and see whether we need to.
This seemed like such a simple bill.
They all do.
Come on, Doctor.
And when you identify yourselves for the record again, please.
For the record, my name is Paula Scavera, Special Assistant Legislative Liaison to Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Our lawyer at the Department of Law drafted this up, and the word temporary is if you're a full-time, 12-month-a-year employee on a fishing boat working on an oil spill, you may be considered something other than a crew member on a fishing boat. I'm not a lawyer. I have been around a lot of lawyers. In fact, I have relatives that are lawyers, but that's how they drafted it.
Okay, and Paula, what we'd like you to do is see if for the next hearing, would you go back to your legal department, because that's labor and it's a little different than ours here as far as drafting services go, and see if we need a definition in here. We'll also find out, but is that satisfactory, Representative Edgman? And so we can bring it back up, and if we need to modify the
Representative Seatman, the chair, I will try to get more clear paragraph written, why it's written this way, if possible, by our attorney.
Sure, that's fine. Are there any other questions from the Department of Labor on this issue? Do you want to maintain your objection to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, just a technical question. I will withdraw my amendment, and if it needs to be fixed, I guess we can rescind our action in the next. Is that the procedure that you'd like to see? I'm happy to do that.
The reason I would like to do that is because then it will be out there, and the bill will be in the way we're more likely to construct it. So, I mean, It will be adopted so that when people in the intervening time between now and the next hearing, we'll actually be able to send them the bill that we're considering.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that case, I will certainly withdraw my objection.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Johansson.
Before Representative Holmes withdraws her objection as well, I'm going to sneak in a quick question. I just wanted to check with your co-prime sponsor. Are they okay with the amendment?
Yes.
Thank you.
And if there aren't other questions, I'll withdraw my objection.
Seeing no other objection, then amendment number one will be adopted. And for anyone online, you know, this doesn't become the official copy until a bill moves out of committee. So if you want to get a copy of this committee, of this bill as we're considering it, please call my office and we'll get you a copy of the updated version as being considered before the committee at this time. Is there any other committee questions or discussion at this time? Seeing none, we'll hold this bill for its next hearing. Appreciate everybody's time and effort, and we will be adjourned at 9:40.